A very warm welcome to the SaaS Business Podcast, specifically for those who run dynamic businesses, are SaaS pension trustees, and have decided to take full control of their personal wealth economy. In the podcast, I share with you how you can understand the power of this high-performance combination of business, SaaS, and wealth generation to create the power, freedom, and choice in your life and creating your multi-generational legacy. I am so passionate about business and SaaS pensions that I wrote a number one Amazon bestseller on the subject, SaaS Pensions, Creating Extraordinary Levels of Compounding Wealth. To find out more about how SaaS can be a game changer in your personal economy, join thousands of SaaS trustees on our Facebook group, SaaS Alliance, and join us at www.saasalliance.org. Now let's get on with the podcast. Well, a very warm welcome to the SaaS Business Podcast, and we've got another packed episode for you today. But we're also delivering lots more content with SaaS Alliance as well. So don't forget to tune in to SaaS Weekly Webinar. Now, we run this webinar at 11 o'clock every Thursday morning. Just go to the SaaS Alliance Facebook page and register. We have around about 300 people registered for that webinar each week. So we talk about anything to do with SaaS, the world of business, and helping you to inspire you along your journey. And it's a very special week this week as well, because we're launching the Equa Academy for property developers. And don't forget, we are SaaS trustees and we deal a lot with SaaS. So really pleased to be launching the Equa Academy. So what do SaaS trustees want to invest their money in? It's a question I get asked a lot. What can I invest in? You know, what are the possibilities? And we did a SaaS Alliance survey every year. 2018, we started it, just about to do one in 2020. But in 2019, a third of all respondees said they wanted to invest their SaaS funds in peer-to-peer crowdfunding. So I thought, what an excellent opportunity to get a specialist in this area and a great friend of mine, Rob Wilkinson, to talk to us about crowdfunding. So very warm welcome, Rob.
Thank you very much, Mark. Pleased to be here.
So, Rob, we know each other well. We'll talk about some of our exploits, I'm sure, a little bit later on in the episode. But if you could just introduce everybody to who you are, a bit of your background and where you are with your business.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Mark. So I have, for those who don't know, quite an interesting background. I left home and went to sea at the age of 16 and spent almost 20 years traveling the world. When I left, I was working on what was at one point the world's largest privately owned yacht for the world's richest man. I only ever worked 6 months of the year. And when I wasn't working, I was always involved in property in one way or another. At the age of 20, I bought my first property in London. And I actually still have that one now. And I continued to grow and build my property portfolio, refurb, and eventually got involved in development projects, primarily raising finance and then managing the projects themselves. And we did pretty well during the last recession, actually, with bankruptcies, the repossession, that type of thing. No one else was lending. And we found quite a creative strategy working with private investors and wanted to gain access to more private investors. And around 2014, I read an interesting article on this new thing called crowdfunding. And with a couple of friends decided it would be a great idea to build a crowdfunding platform. I had the entrepreneurial naivety. Didn't quite know what it involved, but we went for it. And fast forward a couple of years, 2017, we actually launched Crowd With Us. So initially, the platform was built to fund our own projects. But after we spent almost 12 months running a regulated platform, marketing to investors, looking for new projects to get involved in and managing existing projects. In effect, we're running two businesses and nearly killed ourselves in the process. And quite fortuitously, at the same time, we had a number of borrowers that we knew and had been introduced to us knocking on the door asking if we could fund their projects. So we had to take a bit of a look at ourselves and the business and decided to pivot the model. And as such, we stepped away from doing our own projects and decided just to concentrate on funding other people's, which I guess brings us up to where we are today.
Amazing journey. And it's quite a common story for those who are prepared to step outside their comfort zone, that the end in mind sometimes changes along the way. But unless you actually start, you can't start to navigate down that path. And sounds like you found that as well.
On more than one occasion, for sure.
For those who are listening who don't know, Rob wrote an absolutely wonderful chapter in the book, Advice to Your Younger Self. There was 49 chapter authors there, and that was an amazing book. And I guess in terms of writing that chapter, we all stepped a little bit outside of our comfort zone as well, Rob, didn't we?
For sure. That was my debut as a co-author.
The very start of a very illustrious second career, I'm sure. Well, one of the points that you mentioned in there, which wasn't lost on me, was how to overcome those impossible tasks. And they seem impossible, but the words you used were, you know, using 20 minutes a day for 3 months, and you'll look back at that proposition in an entirely different manner.
Yeah, no, for sure. I often frustrate my family and the people I work with by remembering little quotes. And one of my favourites is, by the inch it's a cinch, but by the mile it's a trial. So if you just do little bits at a time, you'll get there eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that. Talk to us about the transition then from your own investment vehicle to having a FCA-regulated crowdfunding platform, because I'm sure people would love to understand what it takes to run a business like that. And then we'll explore how SaaS trustees can get involved as well.
Yes, so I'll say it does involve a lot of blood, sweat and tears. As I said, we didn't actually come from a finance background. We understood the property. Maybe it's worth me saying that a lot of people think that there's a big transition from me working, having a career at sea and then stepping over into the world of property. Although I've always had my hand into property, I'm a master mariner by trade. So I studied naval architecture and ship construction. So the last yacht I was on, for example, was a 500 million build. The average refit, which was every 2 to 4 years, 20 to 40 million, depending on what was involved. So whilst the materials may be different, the concept of running and managing projects and all that is very similar to property. So a lot of those skills were very transferable.
As a refurb of 20 to 40 million, that's probably where the similarities end. I mean, can you give us an insight into the type of ultra high net worth individual that would own a yacht like this?
I actually did a talk, I think a couple of years back now, on the I think it was called The Five Things I Learned from Billionaires. Someone was interested in my background. I have to be careful what I say because I've signed some of the NDAs. But I actually went through the Forbes list of the richest people in the world. I think it's the richest 100, and I've met 53 of them. So without going into too much detail, I guess I could say that one of the last guests that we had on the yacht before I departed was Obama. And we do have someone in common that we've both met that you often mention, Mr. Buffett. So it is the people that we often hear about that run some of the largest companies in the world, for sure, and very, very, very interesting people.
Amazing. They take so many nuggets away from just being around those type of people. So that must have put you in good stead to help build your very successful business.
Well, yeah, I've always wanted to run my own business, and I think that the reason I left it so long before actually taking the full leap, I've always had my hand into many things, was because I don't think you could pay for the kind of mentorship I was inadvertently getting by having conversations with these people on a daily basis, for sure.
Talk to us then about your crowd with us and the type of deals. What type of construct typically would the deals coming onto your platform look like?
So they do vary. We do both debt and equity. So equity, obviously, shares within the SPV, and debt would have additional security in the form of a charge against the property registered at Land Registry, a debenture registered at Companies House against the SPV or the company, and then personal guarantees from the developers. But a typical property, so our minimum fund raised is $250,000, and the maximum is around $2 million at present. That means whilst we have done some very large projects, we actually funded or took a second charge position in a 53 million GDV project just to enable the developer to take on some more funds to complete a purchase. So we're running that for a very short period of time. Generally, the property sizes are probably from 5 to 15 million GDV and around 10 units, something like that. 20% return on cost, something around that, 25% return on cost. But again, these are all very everything is subject to change, obviously, in the current climate, being a lot more methodical in how we look at things. So, but I mean, that gives you a pretty much...
As SaaS has become more and more readily known about and discussed in recent years, have you seen an increase in SaaS trustees coming to your door and interested in investing?
Very much so. And it's really interesting because initially we had our own database of investors. And when we started to really concentrate on growing that within the business, I was coming across people that had these SaaSes and asking if they could invest in our projects. And to be honest with you, at the time, I didn't have the faintest idea what a SaaS was. And I have to admit, that's how I came across yourself, because I think I went to one or two of your events and we started talking. But I found it very difficult from a platform owner to find out the necessary information I needed in order to make that happen. So I can only imagine as a SaaS trustee from the outset how difficult it must be. And I'm forever getting asked questions along those lines.
It becomes an intoxicating subject, really, and it really brings something that most people really spend very little time on in terms of managing their pensions. It brings it into their regular day-to-day language, and they're surrounded by people who are in business, who maybe don't want huge amounts of time to be taken in their investment strategies. And it's always intriguing to me to look at those polls of what a SaaS trustee is actually looking for, and how they're looking to deploy their funds, and the sharp increase in people interested in peer-to-peer lending in organisations such as yourself has been quite stark. And we're waiting now for the pension regulator to release their latest numbers on how many SaaS pensions there are out there. But we expect that to be a fairly sharp increase from the 22,000 at the end of 2018. So it's only set to rise, and there's a substantial amount of funds there that are seeking a strong, secure, investable home.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully we can help them.
Well, absolutely. And if anybody is interested in exploring some of the options a little bit more about investing, whether that be crowd with us or other routes, if you go to saasalliance.org, our website, go to our trusted partners, you'll find Crowd With Us there, and just click on the link and that'll take you straight the way through to Rob and the great team at Crowd With Us. I was mindful when I was preparing for this podcast, just looking back at your book chapter and just picking out some of the elements that you spoke so lucidly about. Not afraid of failure was one that really stuck out to me. And the second was, whatever it is, the answer is yes. And we've got something in common in terms of taking on some fairly crazy challenges in life, outside of business. And we're actually going to be doing one together next year, Rob. So just give us an idea of some of your ultra-endurance pursuits and events that you've been taking on, because I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. I guess I've always loved sport. I've always done it in one form or another. I guess the first time I really challenged myself physically was climbing Mont Blanc. And I've had a particularly long and quite tough trip at sea. I've been away probably for around 5 months. And I just felt a bit drained and a bit down. And rather than take a rest, I really felt like I needed to boost myself in some way and challenge myself physically. So I went online and I thought, I really want to climb a mountain. And I thought Mont Blanc is the one. So I went online. And I think I may have mentioned this in the chapter, but I booked it and paid for it. And I was to join I was leaving the ship a couple of days later, and I was to drive out there in about 3 or 4 days' time. And then after I paid for it and booked it, I read and it said that you should start training 6 months beforehand. And I thought, and you can fill in the rest yourself. So I went home. I got everything together, jumped in my car and drove down to Chamonix, met up with the group of people. I think there was 12 of us in this chalet. And the first evening, the mountain guides are there, and we had to stand in a circle and introduce ourselves. And I was surrounded by marathon runners, triathletes, Ironmen. And I've run 2 marathons in the last 2 months type of thing. And then it got to me, and I said, hi, my name's Rob. I tried to go for a run on the beach. a couple of days ago, but I got out of breath, so I stopped and decided to give it a go. I guess I thought to myself, well, I'm not going to get any fitter now, so what's the point? But the interesting thing is, to fast forward a little bit, out of that group of 12 people, I think only four of us made it to the summit, and I was one of them. And I learned a very valuable lesson on that, which I guess I'd always done, but I didn't really understand, is that no matter what your body tells you and how tired you are, your mind can keep pushing you. They told us at the outset, I think it was about 21 hours summit in total, that summit and back down. And they told us, don't use more than 80% of your energy to get to the top, because you need the last 20% to get back down. I think I used about 120% to get to the top. But yeah, I was on a natural high off the back of that for at least the next 6 months. I had nothing left. I'm not really a very emotional person. Yeah, I don't mind saying that when I got to the top of that mountain, I had nothing left, and all I did was burst into tears, and I couldn't tell you why I was crying, but it was just a relief, and it was an amazing feeling. So I guess that was the first one. I've continued to look for things to do ever since. But I also like to, I guess, partner that up with giving back in some way. So I guess one of the more recent ones is last year, I signed up to row across the Mediterranean in a rowing race against five other ocean rowing boats. And I've never rowed anything more than a kayak before, let alone an ocean-going rowboat. So that was a very interesting experience. And whilst we didn't win, unfortunately, we did beat the record for any previous crossing, which was good. But in order to do that, I had to raise quite a significant amount of money for charity. So I thought I'd arrange a charity dinner, but then I thought everyone does a charity dinner, so I'd do one with a difference. So I arranged a charity boxing dinner, which actually was the anniversary is almost coming up. It was the 1st of June last year. And so I've never boxed before. I'm not really a fighter, but I reveled at the chance for the training and everything else. And the evening was a massive success. And we managed to get a lot of people from the property industry involved. That was great. And I guess one other thing that I did last year as well was, again, for charity to help toward this, was one of my best friends was turning 50. So I thought, just to give you a bit of an idea, we wanted something to do to remember that by. So we decided to, I think you remember me talking about this, to race Husqvarna Enduro motorbikes across the mountains in Bulgaria. So again, I got everyone signed up for that. So six of us went over, we all paid, booked the flights, everything. And then a month before, I realized I didn't know how to ride a motorbike. And so again, another baptism of fire. But yeah, did a couple of weekends of intensive training on that. And it was a resounding success. So it was good. And I guess off the back of that, I guess more recently is the one that we've got next year. For anyone that's listening, I'll never forget, one of the SARA in our office emailed me and said, check this out. And it was Everest in the Alps, climbing the height of Everest on skis. And I said, that sounds amazing. And just say yes. So I signed myself, and markup was accepted, and then emailed him and said, I've just signed you up for this. And your email was back to me was very polite.
Well, I think we've both been through a lot and pushed ourselves, and you know, getting to the, I think we've both been pretty close to the bottom of our reserve tank, and we both understand the power of if your mind and body can work in unison, it's just phenomenal what can be achieved. And I think the US Navy SEALs have that phrase, don't they? Most people live within 40% of their comfort zone, and still that unexplored 60%. And if I've been on one of my longer runs, you know, been running solid for maybe 15, 16, 17 hours, and you know, all your body wants to do is curl up under a hedge and go to sleep. But that power of the mind to drive on and separate the two types of pain, the inconvenient pain of blisters and chafing and things, toenails dropping off, and push through that, and whilst still being aware, as you were at Mont Blanc, of you know, altitude sickness or hypothermia and you know, heat stroke in hot deserts and things. It's bringing all that together, and that's a freedom of choice and exploration that I'm very privileged that I've had the opportunity to do, and I am absolutely relishing the opportunity to do the ski touring, the Everest in the Alps with you. Next year, it's going to be some fun, isn't it?
It is. I can't wait, especially as unfortunately this year's season was cut short.
But we did get out there, didn't we, in February? I think we were the only two lunatics who went skiing and never really went downhill. We just went uphill.
Yeah, we went skiing up. Yeah, lots of bewildered people were skiing past us. But no, it was so much fun.
Yeah, that was superb. So anyway, back to SAS. You know, there is a heightened interest there. Certainly in SAS, there is a heightened interest in what a SAS trustee can invest in. Many of those that have been on the SAS Alliance website or read my SAS pension book will recognise that peer-to-peer lending crowdfunding is increasingly of interest. And one of the metrics that many of the SAS trustees use is their return on time employed or return on time invested. You know, they want that fairly light touch involvement and certainly don't want any overt responsibility there. But that tends to give a nice blend of not just investment, whilst preserving time, but I'm presuming they get some form of experience with the developer as well.
Yeah. So when we actually pivoted the model, what we actually said was we'd only stick deals on the platform that we'd invest in ourselves. And that's not to say that we invest in every deal, because we don't. It's just that we do the same level of due diligence as if we were sticking our own money in. So I actually took a couple of months out of the business, took on a guy called Brian Levine, who's our head of property. So Brian is a chartered accountant by trade, and he was part of the senior management team at UTB Bank, helped set up the underwriting division of Octopus, which was Dragonfly beforehand. So he's got a number of years experience in the underwriting part of the lending world. And so him and I sat down, we wrote the credit policy and systemized the developer onboarding process, et cetera. And to give you an example, when we first relaunched with our new model, only one deal in 30 that came across our desk was one that we'd invest in. So alongside the due diligence that we do, and obviously we share with our investors, when we work with the borrowers, we do site visits, meet the developer, drink. There's a monthly update that goes out when we can. Yeah, we'll visit the sites, webinars, etc. So, and all the investors that are invested in that particular project can become a part of that.
Brilliant. I mean, you mentioned due diligence a number of times there. Just absolutely fundamental. And as SAS trustees, it's a very highly accountable role. And I think they fully understand they need to do due diligence, and sometimes they need that extra help and support, which is what we do in SAS Alliance and with our great partners, such as...
Indeed. I think it's worth saying that we do due diligence prior to putting deals on the platform, and obviously we monitor the projects as they're progressing, but we don't take the onus away from the individual to carry out their own due diligence, because everyone's circumstances are different and the level of risk, etc., they're willing to take. So it's down to each individual, but we do what we can to ensure that we're only putting the right deals on the platform.
Exactly. And as you said in your book chapter, doing the right thing, you know, that moral compass bearing. Brilliant. So, Rob, I'm sure people want to have more questions, and sadly we're running short of time here. So how if people want to understand more, apart from going to sasalliance.org and clicking on the link, how can they get in contact with you on social media?
Yes, I am on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, the like, Rob Wilkinson. My email address, rob.wilkinson@crowdwithus.london. And I guess the website, www.crowdwithus.london, is worth visiting as well.
Brilliant. Well, as always, Rob, it's a pleasure to catch up. Great to hear how the business is growing, the interaction with our wonderful SAS trustees and members, and also some of your other extracurricular pursuits out there, pushing the boundaries, and really looking forward to taking the challenge next year in the Alps with you. So, Rob Wilkinson, thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me.
Are you inspired and want to know more? Well, join our Facebook group, SAS Alliance, and check out my number one Amazon best-selling book, SAS Pensions, Creating Extraordinary Levels of Compounding Wealth. You can also check out SAS Alliance website at www.sasalliance.org. Until next time, thank you for listening.